Everything we thought we knew is no longer like actually working.
Everything is bullshit. So, is that the answer?
Exactly. What is the future of media?
The list is only going to grow in terms of the formats of media, as well as those things are introduced. Even now, I don't know where you stand on the whole Apple Vision Pro thing, but there's like even new like things happening all the time. The change that's going to help us really unlock this business model is this idea of subscribers.
What's one tactic or strategy that's working for Audience Plus right now?
I think it was 60 to 65% of all of our deals were sourced through something like either events or content.
Behind the scenes, it was a small group of people that were doing everything.
Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
I want to know how this insane growth actually happened.
What are you doing when no one's around, no one's looking? Are you just showing up and doing the minimum? Or are you approaching it like a pro? Be a student of the game.
This episode is brought to you by POCUS. POCUS turns data into revenue. It's really that simple. They help you combine all product usage and intent signals your team needs to prioritize the best opportunities and take quick action. POCUS helps you build pipeline based on real buying signals, not your team's best guess, whether that's landing new logos or expanding existing ones. With POCUS, go-to-market teams at Asana, Canva, Miro, and Loom, incredible companies, save 10 plus hours a week digging through data to find and close deals with confidence. So if you want to create focus for your team with POCUS, go see it in action by requesting a demo at POCUS.com/demo. That's POCUS.com/demo. And let's get it rocking. Hello and welcome back to the GTM podcast. It is a good day to be a day. It's actually my birthday today of all days. I don't know when this is going to actually come out, but it is my birthday. So feeling good and excited for this one. It's going to be a super fun conversation and a topic we're going to touch that I love to geek out on. So this is going to be fun. I'm joined by Anthony Caneda. Anthony, welcome, man.
Scott, happy birthday. Thanks so much for having me on. Honored to be spending it with you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Got some fun plans later on. The team, I guess in the office, I always have like what I call fancy drinks of just like some sort of like kombucha or like bubbly water going on. So I have probably like 60 different types of fancy drinks on my desk. It was nice of the team. But yeah, man. So I want to dive right into it because there's so much I want to cover with you. But I always like to tee it up for the listeners. Just a quick bio. So, you know, Anthony is currently the founder and CEO of Audience Plus, an incredible GTM fund portfolio company. It's been awesome to see your early success. But prior to founding Audience Plus, Anthony served as the CMO of really some incredible companies like Hopin and Front, and the founding CMO of Gainsight. Many of us have been customers, where you and the team are credited with really creating the customer success category, which is insane because that seems like such a like huge part of the tech ecosystem, right? It's how like companies think about hiring, and like the amount of changes that came with that category creation is pretty wild. And, you know, it was really about focusing on human first community building, content marketing, live events, and creative activations that maybe others weren't looking to do. And you kind of developed this new playbook for B2B marketing that before that was super fucking boring. And it kind of fueled the company and went from zero to 100 mil ARR, which is wild. And then eventually got acquired by Vista Equity at a $1.1 billion valuation. Looking back on that time at Gainsight, does it even feel real? Like you kind of just feel like you almost black out when you're in those high growth environments.
Totally. I feel like I'm starting to get to the age where like even things like high school and college feel like a movie that I watched like a while ago. And Gainsight's starting to blend into that kind of level of experience where you don't know, you know, when you're in it, just how like impactful and important the work is. And only in like hindsight bias do you look back and like, wow, like we really did something special as a team, you know, as a collective, as a kind of broader community. So yeah, it's kind of wild. It's been now, I guess, 5 years since I've been on the other side of Gainsight, but it feels like a lifetime apart.
Yeah. It's super important to take stock of just like how special those moments are. I think when we're young and going through it, in particular, like my time at outreach, like you think you're going to always have this again, like this is normal. And you realize over time, no, it's not normal. This is an incredible opportunity that I've been given for not only just the success, but you're forced to level up both your skills and as a human being as fast as the company is growing, which is a very difficult thing to do, but it's a blessing looking back.
For sure. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome, man. We'll get into the Gainsight story a little bit more later on in the episode because I want to hear all about, you know, the learnings and what you did right, what you did wrong. But before we get there, me and you can probably geek out on this topic for a while. And so I want to dive right in. And it's this idea of owned media, yep. Using owned media to really fuel your go-to-market motion from really the early stages of your company all the way through, you know, IPO and the promised land. But let's start at the beginning and maybe give a definition of owned media. Because I think I've been in that world, I think, for a while now, but hadn't really heard this term, I think, until you guys started beating the drum.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of those conversations that, you know, can flip the mic and get kind of a lot of your experience and, you know, building Sales Hacker and all the work that you've done kind of at outreach kind of through the kind of Sales Hacker community. And now, of course, with Go-To-Market Now, you know, owned media is this, like, the language around it is old, but it's something that we've all like studied in textbooks, right? There's like paid, earned, owned. And I think in most of our traditional kind of B2B effort so far, we've put a lot of effort on paid media, of course, through digital advertising, like retargeting, all the work that we've done from that perspective. And from an earned perspective, I kind of bucket things like SEO, social, and of course, PR and other things where we're at the beck and whim of a third party that sits between us and our audience, ultimately. It could be an algorithm that's the third party. It could be a reporter. It could be whatever. And we've built really good muscle around those two kind of paths to market. But owned media at the heart is more about the relationship, where we now can have a direct relationship between our brand and the audience that we serve. And the media is one part of it, for sure. You know, as you were talking about my experience or my Gainsight experience, you know, it comes in the form of content marketing, comes in the form of events, community, you know, effort. And so there's many mediums that drive the relationship, but ultimately the newness here that we're advocating for is to allow brands to subscribe or audience members to subscribe to brands that they care about. And we're seeing a lot of this trend coming from the consumer context, where things like Substack exist now, where you can follow your favorite journalists and creators. You have Patreon and some other kind of platforms help enable that as well. And we believe in this sort of new world of B2B marketing, where a lot of the tactics that we've done for two decades now, again, call it those paid earn tactics, call it inbound marketing or whatever, they're just not working to the same extent that they've used to. And so we need something new. We need a new way that kind of help us pierce through the noise, build real value with our audience. And we believe owned media is kind of the path forward for that. And so again, for those that want a principal example, it's imagine what Sales Hacker meant to the outreach community, where there was relationship developed between the Sales Hacker and then, of course, outreach brand and your audience of sales professionals, and you were resourcing them. You weren't explicitly selling them things. You were hosting events and you were investing in building value for the community. And the bet over time is on the other end of that investment of value creation is potentially, for the right cohorts, a commercial relationship. And so we see every company kind of moving down this path in the next decade of B2B marketing.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely see the world in the same light. I think the owned media also goes into this idea of like ecosystem-led growth that I talk a lot about, which I feel like is the future of how we're going to take products to market and scale those products. And that is around, you know, I often say one pillar is like building networks. And a great way to do that is content, is media, is community. And then, you know, you need to find a way to provide value to those networks that is not your product or your service. And then over time, if you do that well, you're basically going to create enough surplus value that you can detract some of that value, turn it into revenue without killing the thing, you know? And I think
that's right.
Part of the thing is that balance between not trying to commercialize relationships too early is a big one. That's why you do see a lot of, like, in the outreach sales hacker instance, we had two separate brands and there was very clear lines in the sand of like, hey, you sign up for Sales Hacker, you're not going in the CRM, you're not going on a BDR sequence or anything. And we had really, really firm lines in the sand of those are separate, you know, entities. And this is the media and this is the community. And of course, there's opportunities to prime the market for future launches. And you can invite, you know, target companies of outreaches to a Sales Hacker dinner and things like this, that you can encourage that overlap. But yeah, I think it's going to play a massive role. Question for you, and it's something I think about a lot. So you brought up this idea of, you know, B2B, really just using a lot of B2C tactics. We've always done that. We're just like a few years behind. And what I'm seeing, and I talk to a lot of founders every day now, is so in B2C, you look at almost every brand that's been launched that's almost like an overnight success, oftentimes by celebrities or big influencers, thought leaders in that world. They have the distribution engine. They build the media and distribution before the product, not the other way around. For the last 50 years, 100 years, we've been building the product and then trying to get demand. And now it's flipped. I think that trend is coming in B2B as well.
Building an audience, these things that, you know, we didn't see in sort of the common vernacular of B2B marketing. We're still in this like MQL, like, you know, whatever kind of taxonomy, but we started to see complete strangers unaffiliated with a company saying it back to us, which for a founder or an early stage entrepreneur, what's amazing is you're starting to get that problem market fit in addition to building the distribution, because we were driving people to subscribe to our content, to kind of follow along and follow more and get more value. So then when we did launch the product and the company more formally in May, we launched into an existing audience that we had been cultivating for about a year or so. So I think this is definitely the way to launch a B2B business, maybe to your point, any kind of company in this kind of next generation. It's starting with distribution first, you know, again, to the power of ecosystem, power of community, and whether that's folks that are actively listening within your audience, maybe it's advisors or, you know, mentors or other folks that are some of the early, you know, folks that could help validate the story. But it's a much different playbook than it was, you know, who knows, like 5 years ago to really start a business.
Yeah, totally, totally. And so my brain sometimes goes obscure areas, but this is a question as you were talking in media, invest more in brand, invest more in employees' brands. So I think to build a good media company or a good community, you need like a few figureheads, right? Like people usually connect with like a human being over just like the identity of a community. And you do see, you know, like Barstool Sports, you know, they bought it and then they're like, oh, this is not as valuable without the founder at the helm. And then it goes back similar, you know, Sales Hacker and Outreach. We left Outreach like, oh, this is great. But like, Max and Scott were sort of the bridges between the two. And so how do you think about that? Because just objectively, that's an inherent risk for a company. I'm a CEO of X software company. I'm pumping all this money into a community. I have two or three people running that helm. And if those people, you know, leave, they can be seen as the community. I would love just your thoughts on that. I think it's an interesting thing to explore, and maybe there's ways to mitigate that risk.
Well, part of what I've seen too is just my own work history, working for great CEOs who were the embodiment of the brand. Aaron Levy at Box, Nick, of course, with Gainsight. And, you know, I think there's great strength in that. People buy from people. You are the physical manifestation of the brand and someone that hopefully is a bit more relatable and authentic and can help would-be customers understand kind of what you stand for as a company. I'll go so far as to saying, I think it's a responsibility of whether it's the founder, CEO, or some group of people that can be spokespeople for the business to be on camera. And that's uncomfortable for a lot of people. Like, I'm an introvert myself, but I push myself to, you know, be on camera. And it's one of those things like getting in the gym, you just put in your reps and it kind of gets easier along the way. But I think in this new world that we're operating in, you have to be out there. Now, the challenge to your point is what happens if, God forbid, the CEO leaves or something happens? Like, what do you do then? And so I think it's really important to transfer this brand equity from just the founder into the master brand of the company. And a part of this is this vision for the future of B2B brands, where we're almost more like networks, very similar to what y'all are building at GoToMarket Now. But you are NBC for your software category. And so Barstool would be another example, maybe a more modern example. But your job is to create programming, to find the right voices that are contributing to that broader kind of initiative or practice that you're evangelizing. And you are the go-to destination for that conversation. So now what happens is your CEO is no longer the sole kind of brand equity that you might have needed, especially in the early days, to start the momentum and start rolling the rock down the hill. But you're able to start to move that brand equity into a broader network effect, where your CEO or your founder or whatever is one character of several who are a part of your storytelling strategy. So you still have a role for that person, but you might highlight other internal voices, you know, seeing some really interesting kind of momentum behind this idea of creators within your employee base. How do you sort of activate those folks? There's some real opportunity for getting the right voices to represent the brand. Really exciting about external voices too, that are creating content on your network. And by doing so, building equity into your network by sort of transferring their own and negotiating distribution off of their participation. So they're actually blasting the episode or whatever out to their networks too. Mm-hmm. Those could be customers, partners, the ecosystem, to your point, that you can kind of tap and unlock. So I think it's both fundamentally a core part of the job description of the founder and a real risk if you stop there. You have to be able to invest in transferring that equity into the broader kind of master brand, unlocking other voices to sort of build a more sustainable kind of motion there.
Yeah. I see that vision that you're painting definitely coming to pass. It's like, in your example, Audience Plus, the company, is like, becomes the de facto media engine to talk about this idea of owned media. And you go there when you're trying to build that internally, understand it, stand it up. And then, oh, by the way, if you need help on that journey, we have software that will help you, you know. And then it's not like the other way around of like selling the software and then illuminating the problem. It's like, you know where to come if you have that problem, and we'll help you do it. It's super timely and interesting. So I'll share this. So I don't know when this is dropping, but we just did this. We create this cool, like, lightweight piece of software with one of our other partners, Cabal, and we're actually dropping it today, later today, but probably old news when this actually drops. But it really started with this, is we want to talk about ecosystem-led growth. So me and Brian Murray, CEO of Kraft, CEO of Cabal, we were like, okay, what is the de facto kind of media resource for this? So we write this long form blog post, and then we're like, we want to make it like actionable. We want to make it like a template or a playbook that people can just put in their organization. And we're like, but that needs more explaining. Maybe do a podcast series. And then that got us asking, what is the future of media? Because I think even the definition of media is expanding to technology, right? So that's where we ended up getting. It's like, well, instead of telling people about this problem and telling them how we had success with this, couldn't we build a lightweight piece of software that showed people how to do it and guided them through it? And so that's where we landed. And I think tools like that, technology is getting easier and easier to create. So I think there will be a future of media that looks a lot more like guided journeys and software than, you know, blog posts in the future.
For sure. For sure. I think that the calibration point is like, what's going to create the most value for our audience, and an appreciation that you've got a plethora of different expectations or learning styles or, you know, biases toward how value is, you know, consumed, or how they get to that kind of moment. You know, for some people, they love to read. They might love the blog post and, you know, want to sort of read through it. Others might never have read a blog, might not have read a blog post in like a year, and it's all about short form video and what's coming in the feed. Others want to like plug a podcast episode in and drive and just kind of tune out and kind of, you know, have that sort of companionship that comes with listening along to a conversation. And so I think it's really compelling to say, well, there's, you know, the list is only going to grow in terms of the formats of media, as well as those things are introduced. Even now, I don't know where you stand on the whole Apple Vision Pro thing, but there's like even new like things happening all the time. Where do we start and how do we prioritize these things? But how do we, you know, try to give our audience the, you know, many different means of to this value that we're trying to kind of create? And I think web apps, tools, these are things that for kinetic folks that want to get their hands on the keyboard, they don't want to just listen or watch. It's a phenomenal opportunity and the channel to invest in.
Fun times, man. It's pretty cool to live in a world where that is an option of these other mediums that we can now play in. But the last question I had on this topic, and it's a tough one, and it's one I think everyone is trying to figure out. I spent arguably most of my career trying to figure it out, is that idea of transitioning from kind of the second pillar to the third pillar, which is you've built this network, you've created enough value in this network through kind of owned media, and now you're trying to get that to actual revenue. I think that's where a lot of people fall down. There's people get slaves to attribution and like, this wasn't directly attributed, and there's all these like issues. How do you advise your customers that you work with when they come back and they're like, hey, listen, this is clearly working, but I got to go show my CEO and like, I know this is working, but I got to go to the board, my CEO, and like come up with some numbers. How do you advise them on that?
Well, this is really the newness that we're advocating for, because I think this idea of like companies becoming media companies, it's almost like a meme now. It's been around for, you know, a decade probably or more, but the missing piece has always been data. It's been, to your point, from the attribute, it's an attribution war. It's like, oh, you know, I got 30K to do a video project, worked with this agency, we put it on YouTube, we got like 200 views. Then my CEO is asking me like, how did it go? And I'm looking at GA, trying to see what happened traffic on that day. Did we distribute it right? And then like, that's the posture that we take to proving the value of media. And surprise, if that's the way we do it, chances are you're not going to get the 30K for the next video next quarter, because it's nearly impossible to prove the value. I'd argue even with some, you know, even not to make a total hot take, but SEO in some cases too, where we're producing a lot of content optimized for an algorithm. We're trying to measure that through organic traffic, which again is good, but still there's this like, well, did it or didn't it? You know, how did PageRank affect traffic, you know, when that post happened? And there's all this ambiguity that for a CRO or a CEO, they're like, I don't get it. Like, can you just tell me what's working and what isn't working? And so we think that the change that's going to help us really unlock this business model is this idea of subscribers. And this is where we've spent a lot of time, like as we thought about how to tell the story, focusing on the owned media component because of this idea of collecting subscribers to your content and your thought leadership. Because there's a couple components that happen, or three things that happen there. The digital conversion rate. Today, a typical B2B SaaS company sees a 1% to 2% conversion rate when they're leading with like get demo or talk to sales or start using the product. Companies in the consumer media industry, and we're seeing within our own customer base, are seeing upwards of an 8% to 10% conversion rate with when the call to action is to subscribe. Because you're consuming maybe a podcast episode just like this and you want to hear more and you want to kind of follow along. And so there's a higher proclivity to subscribe and versus want to talk to a sales rep and, you know, buy a product that you may not have budget for today. The second bit is when they're doing that, they're now entering into a first party relationship with you from a data perspective. This a little bit gets into our product a little bit. I'll resist the temptation to go too deep into that. But as folks are now opted in to your content and you have the sort of email consent to reach out to them, what we see is you now have this sort of like digital breadcrumb trail of what they're engaging with, what topics are they interested in, where are they finding your content, like how are they sort of getting to your site, are they commenting, are they sharing, and then how does, if you were to almost take a step back and model success and say, hey, we find that folks within our content universe that interact with this asset or this creator or this topic have a outsized, you know, propensity to convert into an opportunity, how do we then sort of strategically kind of build that journey for folks that are within that kind of persona set to help move them kind of further down the field. And of course, if all the data is first party, then you can tell a much better attribution story. You're not guessing on, all right, Spotify is telling us this or YouTube's telling us that. I think that did something to traffic. So I think that's sort of how this goes from just a really fun conversation that gets a lot of likes from like early believers on LinkedIn when we share the short form clip, to fundamentally how marketing teams hit their pipeline targets this year. It's that connection, it's that data kind of orientation, and it's using the data to influence content production decisions, how we distribute the content, how we enable the sales team and the CS team kind of with the content, ultimately tuning towards driving outcomes for the business. Not dissimilar from what HubSpot and inbound marketing and marketing automation has introduced for the last two decades, but new formats, new channels, and this idea of driving subscribers, which we've seen from the consumer context with Substack again and others, is a behavior that buyers are willing to do.
A quick pause from this interview to talk through some of my time spent inside various high growth sales organizations. It was always pretty clear to me how much time was spent on the operational bloat of actually running that organization. We were spending so much time evaluating multiple forecasting vendors, tracking down our reps to get their updated pipelines, or waiting on sales ops or rev ops to send us the dashboards we needed to do our jobs. And that was always at the expense of closing deals. That sounds familiar to you. Our partner Cinch lets you put all that hassle and headache in the past. Cinch is a single platform for all of your sales and sales ops tooling, from using natural language to build dashboards that will make your rev ops lead jealous, to getting forecasting, pipeline management, and lead routing from a single vendor. Cinch allows you to spend more time driving the business forward. If you want to learn more, head over to withcinch.com. That's with, S-Y-N-C-H.com. Now back to the interview.
Totally. Yeah. And you are doing the right. You're also able to serve up content that people really want. You know, we were just doing our best as marketers for so long of like, all right, well, we think people will read this ebook, and it just sat in a specific folder for, you know, 7 months and then got deleted. And now this is you can use what people are ingesting and serve them up more and more relevant content. But anyway, as I preface this whole conversation, we could probably geek out on this for hours, but I do want to go back to kind of your time at Gainsight, because not everyone gets a run like that. And I know there's a really kind of cool story that kind of kicked off this incredible journey. And we love stories on the GTM podcast. So would love to, you know, fly you back, you know, in a time machine to that period of your life and just share a little bit about that time period.
Yeah. Yeah, so my original career background, I was in sales. I was an SDR at Box. It was my first job out of college. I moved into BD and was doing kind of partnerships and trying to figure out kind of what I wanted to be when I grew up, really. And had a good run with a company called LiveOffice, where Nick Mehta was the CEO before joining a company that would become Gainsight. BD manager, 22 years old, like whatever, but, you know, did some pretty good work there. And then had sort of, you know, this family tragedy. I can literally picture where I was. Drove down to Los Angeles, where I'm from originally, and was driving back up to the Bay Area where I was living after the LiveOffice acquisition. And it was a Sunday night. It was dark. For those that have driven the 5 from LA to San Francisco or back, I was coming out of the Grapevine where there's like bad cell phone reception, kind of sketchy, like semis, the whole thing, trying to stay focused. And I get a call from Nick Mehta. And this is like a Sunday at, you know, like 7 p.m., which I do. Whoever calls you on a Sunday at 7 p.m., like there's something behind that phone call. You pick up that call, let alone it being kind of Nick. And so thank God we had cell phone reception, because he was sort of walking me through that he was stepping into this new company. It was called a different name at the time, but that would become Gainsight, and wanted to see if I was interested in learning more. And they could have sold like widgets. I don't care what they were selling. I would have said yes, because for those that now have know Nick well, you know, he's a values-driven leader, cares deeply about culture, the kind of person I'd kind of follow blindly into the dark. And so I was sort of preparing to take on like either a sales-ish leadership role or product, actually, which I was spending some time at Sales Symantec doing. And he was like, what do you think about marketing? And I knew nothing about marketing. It was all sort of first principles, fake it till you make it. But he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And now, I guess 15 years or so later, you know, feel like I've kind of found my calling. But a lot of that came from an external, you know, voice and someone that, again, saw a skill set that I think he says there was a presentation I gave at LiveOffice as a BD manager, you know, 22 years old, that stuck with him. And so I was on his list to call. So it's funny how those little life moments could literally change everything for you along the way. It was certainly my story.
That's such an incredible skill for a leader to have, is being able to see a version of someone that they can't see for themselves yet. And I imagine that's...
It's unreal.
Yeah. I imagine that's formulated your... I bet you look for that a lot as now being a leader yourself and leading large teams. I bet you've not shied away from giving people, you know, opportunities that maybe on paper they might not look perfect for.
For sure, for sure. And we're doing it too. I think it's, man, I don't know if it's a skill that you can learn or if it's just something innate in you. I think in some cases I've gotten it right. In other cases, I've gotten it really wrong as well. So I admire Nick for sure, and folks like him. And you hear these stories, right? The, you know, the Silicon Valley kind of legendary, you know, founders that have gone before, you know, they've figured out a way to hone this in. And I'm curious, as I kind of develop as a CEO founder, if I can, you know, kind of work that muscle. But I admire folks that can so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a superpower. Maybe one of the strongest superpowers in the world, you know, that and getting people to follow you and then being able to give that vision of the future of someone else's potential is big. What did you kind of learn from that experience? So you're given this opportunity, you're kind of building the plane as it flies. You know, you're not only are you in a high growth environment, but you're also skill building at the same time. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, I mean, that was really where a lot of this, you know, we're calling it own media now, but this sort of like brand building, kind of audience building type muscle happened, because I stepped into the role. You know, I Wikipedia'd demand generation, so I can sound smart to talk about it in the interviews, basically. But any exposure I had to marketing was through consumer marketing, through like Airbnb as the sort of like legendary brand, you know, following. Like I weirdly was inspired by like late night television, like James Corden doing carpool karaoke and how he sort of built these like serialized content kind of things and distributed them on YouTube. And so thankfully that ended up being the winning kind of strategy for us at Gainsight, because we didn't have this like incumbent competitor in our space that we were trying to unseat and steal market share from. In fact, like when we saw that customer success professionals were, I think there was like 100 or so of them on LinkedIn at the time, but there was this underserved kind of persona that no one was championing. So if I like spent my first 90 days spinning up like AdWords campaigns for customer success, no one was searching for those words. If we were doing an outbound campaign or list building for customer success professionals, the TAM is 100 people. So the old playbook just didn't work and it wouldn't have worked. So we did weird and unnatural things. We hosted a conference 3 months into, you know, our time at the company that wasn't about us or our like three customers at the time, but all about this practice of customer success. That sort of proved the hypothesis of sort of investing in thought leadership. So we kept going. We developed content on our blog. We produced a podcast. We started doing, you know, live virtual kind of workshops and virtual programs. And so the thesis around, okay, and I think we talked about this earlier, if I can create value for that persona, would they eventually buy the software? And the answer was yes. And a really interesting kind of component to this too, for anyone listening who's either in an early market or creating a category or anything of the like, is what's interesting about all that activity is it kind of pulls the market closer to you from a timing perspective, where we today are on this podcast talking about like owned media is this like future thing. A lot of the work that we're doing in marketing is to make that future a lot closer, so that as we start launching these products and services, like we're able to sort of catch the wave that we're creating. And so all that was learned at Gainsight by doing, and it sort of became this playbook that I brought with me to front and hop in. And ultimately, I think it's becoming the dominant, like, so all that came from that phone call on the grapevine back in 2013, and very grateful for it.
Amazing. Amazing. You said something there that I loved, and it's this idea of marketing pulling the way you see the future closer. And that's kind of marketing's job, right? The CEO can go create this vision of the future, and it's marketing's job to pull that vision closer. I think that's a great way to describe the function of marketing. So the other thing that I wanted to quickly talk about is what were some of the hiccups? What did you do wrong? Because brand is also, it's hard, we talked about it, it's hard to quantify. You make big bets, some work, some don't. Where did you go wrong? And it could be personally, it could be professionally. If you were to go back, what would you do a little differently?
Yeah, I mean, the one that jumps out in the Gainsight story is a lot of that pulling the future forward motion became like the problem that we were obsessed about as a company, as a marketing team within the company. So what did that mean? We had like amazing events, like bigger, larger than life brand, really thought deeply about NPS and all of, and creating a great experience. But it took us too long to go all in on product marketing. And so the challenge was we sort of like were slower to monetize, maybe not the full wave, but the sort of build up to the momentum. And so, you know, not sure how much this, I don't think this is confidential, but like a lot of the very early days of Gainsight was like, you know, the early adopter kind of curve of the, you know, Jeffrey Moore kind of adoption lifecycle chart. And then when we got to the chasm, we hadn't done enough, we haven't built enough equity in the software, in the platform to capture the attendees to our conference, if that makes sense, and the subscribers and the listenership within our audience. And so we then invested in it quite a bit and ultimately were able to catch the wave as customer success became more mainstream. Really, as I like left the company, a lot of this happened in the years since too. And so I think that my biggest regret was not investing in product marketing earlier, talking about how the category matters and you can do it and you can operationalize that practice in a number of different ways, but you could do it better using our technology. And here's why. That's the bit that I think we were slower to, you know, pour resources into. And so we're trying to fix that a little bit at Audience Plus, probably later than either already than I'd like to be. But I think for any company that is leaning into brand, make sure that the content, the messaging, all of this is pointing back to your software, at least implicitly, maybe not directly, such to sacrifice that trust, but make sure you can tell a story on the kind of brand messaging all the way from your products all the way up to something more aspirational, but connect it back so that you can, you know, when the time's right, monetize and actually sell software, which ultimately is what we're accountable to on the other end of any media intention we might have.
Yeah, you don't want your, you can do this too well. You can do these strategies we're talking about too well, and then your brand can outpace your product story, your product messaging. And so, yeah, that's the word of some advice. Don't do what we're talking about too well and not have the, exactly, the other pieces in play.
The worst thing that could happen if you're trying to become a media company is that you'll actually become a media company. Like, you do not want that. You are a software company, but you're acting like a media company. It's important to not lose sight of that. It's a brutal time to be a media in the pure play media business today. So,
yeah, for sure. Okay, this has been awesome, man. Thanks for sharing your story and a ton of great nuggets. I want to wrap up with two questions. Always keep them the same. They're intentionally vague, so you can highlight, reiterate something that we talked about or something totally different. First question is, what is one widely held belief that revenue leaders or founders believe to be true that you think is bullshit or no longer serving us today?
I think it's a weird time to ask that question in marketing because like nothing's working. Like nothing, everything we thought we knew is no longer like actually
everything
working.
Everything is bullshit. Is that the answer?
Everything's bullshit. Exactly. End of sentence. So literally that's the big one. But I think where I'm second guessing strategies, it's like, okay, we're at the point of scaling an SDR team, like hiring our first SDR, starting to build that. What does outbound look like in this world where there aren't active projects or budgets for a lot of technology purchases? SEO, like, am I really going to spend the next two decades or whatever, like working on this SEO thing where we've got real needs like in quarter right now, and I've got one content person that could work on that. So I think that Sangram actually posted something really interesting this week. If you guys know Sangram, fantastic marketer, like bringing a first principles approach into everything in 20 is probably a good idea, because I would argue, we talked about how you build a company, but how you generate pipeline, it's not the same anymore. And all of us have some ideas, and hopefully you consider owned media in this conversation as one idea of that. But you got to like really put this stuff to test and figure out what's going to work for you, because the only thing that won't work is the same thing that we've done for the last couple decades.
Yeah. It's a good answer. Probably the most honest answer we've had in a long time. What's BS? Fucking everything.
Yeah. Now that I've impressed everyone.
Yeah. No, it's incredibly important. I think what was cool about your story too, tying it back, is like Gainsight, as with no big incumbent, you had a forcing function to approach everything with first principles. Your first principles, because you're new to marketing. And then because there's no playbook or incumbent that came before you, you were forced into first principles thinking. So you did that journey and lived that, and it was successful. And I think people need to do that again in this environment, you know, with other, you know, tailwinds like AI. And, you know, we didn't even get into that rabbit hole, but like, you know, that's changing absolutely every tactic that we used to run as well. All right. On the tactic front, everyone's looking for things that happen to be working. What's one tactic or strategy that's working for Audience Plus right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we actually recently started looking at our pipeline, sort of what's working, you know, how are we kind of driving customers? And, you know, what's interesting is like, I think over 60% of our customers are coming through, this is going to sound self-serving, but it's true, like through our media efforts. And when we say that, what I mean is like, you know, we've hosted events like a road show that we did with fellow portfolio companies like Mutiny and others. We've done a CMO event just for CMOs, where the topics were not about our products at all, but all about like the current kind of state of the profession. We have like a newsletter program, all of these things we're trying to just resource our target buyer. And what's interesting is even folks that aren't yet in market to buy, when they are ready, they've sort of self-selected hand raised and have come to us. And so I think it was 60 to 65% of all of our deals were sourced through something like either events or content, which for a, you know, company that's only been selling for 3 quarters, it's been fascinating to see just kind of how quick that feedback loop can be versus the traditional kind of brand investments that take, you know, a long time. So that's what's working for us. Thankfully, that's again, kind of a strategy we believe in. But, you know, plenty of other learnings on what isn't working, but that's one that we're going to look to double down on this year.
I love that. 60%. That is a high number and in a quick period of time. So kudos to you and the team. Well, man, thanks for hanging out with me today. That was super fun. Appreciate all the knowledge you dropped. And to all our listeners, you know, thanks for rocking with us and lending us your eardrums for the last, you know, 45 minutes. I always say, you know, listing's one thing, executing is something different. Take some of these lessons, ideas, apply them to your business. Go out there and have a good quarter. It's tough up there, but we got this, and we'll see you next week.